The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. This week, Kieran Deal, Tian Tran, and Dana Schwartz join in studio to discuss quitting, the good, the bad, and the flounce. Alyssa Mastromonaco also joins to talk about Ivanka's empty gesture tour in Africa. And, as always, the hills will die on. First, let's get to some housekeeping. If you have a hill that you will die on, record a 30-second voice memo on your phone and send it to hysteria@crooked.com. You can also email us there if you have other concerns or questions, but just keep in mind that a few people check that email address. I check it, Caroline checks it. And so if you have love letters or hate mail, you should probably direct that elsewhere. We also are in the process of getting you more merchandise, so I promise if you just wait a little bit longer, we'll have that for you, so sit tight. Now let's get started.
Hello.
Wow, coming in hot today, Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Well, we have so much to talk about.
We do have a lot to talk about. I feel like this week has just sort of been in a holding pattern. By the time people listen to this, people will see the rainbow of redactions that AG Barr has issued to the Mueller report, and we'll have moved on to a totally new shitstorm. But there are some kind of under the radar things I wanted to talk about with you, Alyssa. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, do you remember when President Trump said that places in Africa were shithole countries?
I recall that.
Yeah. Well, his daughter is kind of traipsing around in Africa now, Ivanka, pretending as though none of that ever happened, continuing to live on Planet Ivanka. So let's talk a little bit about Ivanka being in Africa this week, because it's the most annoying possible thing I think that she could do. But let's get into it. So Ivanka Trump is in, she visited Ethiopia, and I think she's visiting the Ivory Coast as well. She is promoting this sort of fairy dust version of like women's empowerment, where you just appear and you say, you're empowered, and then you magically are empowered. You've done it. You're empowered. You're on my Instagram. You're empowered. She's kind of going on this tour that is, and she's promoting women's business loans. She's promoting women-owned businesses. But this all kind of doesn't really make a lot of sense in light of the policies of the Trump administration that disempower women by cutting them off from reproductive health services. So, Alyssa, what do you make of Ivanka Trump's visit to Africa thus far?
So I want you to know that I really went down the rabbit hole on this one. And so I'm coming with some thoughts.
Okay.
So one, she flew commercial. That's great.
Yeah.
I actually appreciate that.
I appreciate that too.
She is going to a service for the victims of the airliner that blew up.
Yes.
And so I appreciate that she's doing that. I appreciate that, you know, that while her father did call Africa shithole countries, the mere fact that she's going will make the people in Ethiopia and Africa think that maybe he didn't mean it, which I think is good. You know, like, I don't want people thinking that America thinks that they live in a shithole country. And so for the people of Ethiopia, I think that this is a good and positive and probably exciting trip, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. That's my even-handed intro. Now, why? Look, it's like Ivanka cares so much, so much about going back to New York and kind of like easing back into her sitch, right? Mm-hmm. Like parties and galas and luncheons and being a socialite. And I think that she thinks that if she puts these pictures of her with women in Ethiopia on her Instagram, that somehow she will be able to point back to that years from now and be like, no, I did a good things when I was there. And I think that it's just for someone who exploits people in her businesses in Java, I think is where she had the most violations and pays women so little they can't live near their families that like, I don't really understand. Like, yes, it's a good trip for people in Ethiopia, but it's the most hypocritical fucking thing that she could probably be doing.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, another interesting thing is Ethiopia has a female president, Sahle-Work Zewde, and she was elected, I believe, in 2018. And, you know, it seems really rich that a woman like Ivanka Trump, who promotes a man who is so aggressively misogynist, would show up in a country that is enjoying its first female head of state and be like, I'm with you. Yay. It seems so empty and so hollow to me. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the global gag rule and how it sort of makes this entire trip a moot point. As soon as Donald Trump came into office, as all of his Republican predecessors post Ronald Reagan have done, he instituted something called the Mexico City rule, which requires any NGOs, non-government organizations that are receiving American funding in foreign countries to not mention abortion if they want to continue getting the funding. It's an expansion of the Reagan era and the Bush eras, because in the Reagan and Bush eras, it was any healthcare providing NGO can't talk about abortion. And now it's any NGO in general can't talk about abortion and receive American funding. And study after study has shown that giving women the ability to choose the size of their family and the timing of their children is the most definitive factor in their economic success. And so it seems so silly to me that a person would go to a country, to a continent, 54 different countries in Africa, but she would go to a continent that has such barriers in between women and women being able to control the size of their families, and such bad health outcomes for women who aren't able to control the size of their families.
And the thing that for people who are listening to understand is that the Trump policy, so initially the Mexico City policy applied to about $600 million in family planning funding. What Donald Trump has done is apply it to $9 billion mm-hmm. in healthcare programs globally. So it's not even like he is keeping it up or it's incrementally worse. This is like catastrophically worse.
It's catastrophically worse. And he's trying to institute a similar policy stateside here in the US, which is going to affect women here as well. Another thing I wanted to bring up is the fact that the aid that is going to women owned businesses is about $50 million worth in aid, which isn't nothing. I think that, like you said, Alyssa, there are good things about this trip. It's not bad to bring attention to women-owned businesses. It's not bad to emphasize the fact that women don't own enough of the means of production. That's great. But $50 million, just to give a perspective, is less than the amount of money that the American taxpayer has paid to Donald Trump for going to Mar-a-Lago. So it's not that much money. It's a lot of PR for Ivanka for not much money, ultimately, in the face of what we could be doing.
Well, the interesting thing to add to this, based on my rabbit hole last night, is that for all of the things, this is like the thing that's crazy, for all of the aid they're cutting out of the budget. So the current budget is $50 million for what she, the sort of empowerment program, but she has requested an additional $100 million for this initiative in the 2020 budget, mm-hmm. which to me just goes to her trying to be like, look what I did, guys, when she gets the fuck out of the White House, because there are, like, the program is wonderful, but like, if she's going to use her sway, maybe she could also help some women in America.
Mm-hmm. And that brings up a very interesting point, because Ivanka has tried to get credit for spearheading family leave policies. America is still one of three countries in the world that doesn't have mandatory government sponsored maternity leave for new moms. Ivanka's family leave policy is and always will be fucking trash. It would require people, I mean, Alyssa, you know this, it would require people to borrow against their Social Security and in order to pay for maternity leave. So basically, if you have a kid and you're like, well, I think I want to stay home with this baby for a little bit so it doesn't die, then you have to, you end up having to work longer at the end of your working life before you start collecting Social Security benefits. That's payday lending. It's moronic. It is ridiculous. Nobody should have to borrow anything. Look who she's working with.
She's with fucking Mick Mulvaney, who is trying to, you know, get rid of any sort of policies limiting, you know, the payday lending where people pay like 800% on a loan.
Yeah.
And so this is like part and parcel. Like, she tries to pretend like she's different, but she is no worse. I mean, she's no better, God help me, than Mick Mulvaney or Stephen Miller.
Yeah. Or Betsy DeVos.
Sorry, girl.
Or Betsy DeVos, who is trying to protect for-profit colleges that scam people out of their money that they wanted to use to further their education. I also think that Ivanka is somebody who is, she's clearly the smartest person in her immediate family, save her mother, Ivana, who is obviously very smart.
Right.
She's smarter than her father and her brothers, but she's also not that smart, like very clearly not that smart, but has spent so much time around people who are aggressively dumb that she believes herself to be smart. It's like, if I...
No. But I think it's different. I actually think she might be smart, and that she is doing this, I'm not a conservative, I'm a pragmatist bullshit, because she thinks in her deranged brain that she's going to be like the first female president.
I think she does think she's going to be the first female president. But
I think she does.
But that's like such a disconnect from her in reality, though, because her approval rate, nobody under 40 likes her. You know, nobody really, she doesn't have high approval ratings at all. She's mostly viewed negatively by people. She's sort of living on her own planet, I think.
She is our resident Janet from another planet.
She is 100% Janet from another planet. And it's sort of like, on one hand, you have to sort of have a facade to keep yourself from crumbling into dust when you're a public figure. You know, you have to sort of believe in yourself in a way that's impermeable. But Ivanka is so disconnected from what people in America think about her. That was one thing I thought about her foreign trip. It's like, well, maybe she's going to Africa because nobody here likes her. This is her Hasselhoffing. Like, she's like, well, I can't get a singing career here. I'm going to go Hasselhoff over in Africa and become huge over there.
So I don't think that that's an outlandish theory. I definitely think that this like little goodwill tour of hers is because she wants to be feted, right? Mm-hmm. And like when your father calls the place that you're going a shithole country, the bar's like pretty low for you to be better than that.
Right. Basically, you just have to not throw up on the prime minister, a la the first George Bush, and you are going to have a good and successful trip.
Which, like, as someone with stomach issues, like, I don't fault George Bush for that.
No, I mean, what else? The video of that, though, is like, pretty unbelievable.
There's a video, and there's actually, I will have to find it, there is a Japanese word for being bushed, meaning being puked on.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, that's about as good a note as any to end our discussion of Ivanka Trump in Africa, because I'm feeling the Japanese word for being puked on whenever I think about it. Well, Alyssa,
all right, girl.
We'll talk next week.
Are we jinxing?
Do I owe you a Coke? Do you owe me a Coke? Are we jinxing each other?
You owe me a Coke.
We owe each other a Coke. Okay.
All right.
Talk to you next week. Love you.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, we're back to the part of the show called Personal Political. This is where we talk in depth about things that we think about a lot, even though they don't really have anything to do with the news. I want to welcome my panel today. First, we have a person who very timely, in a timely manner, just quit her job, Dana Schwartz.
Hi there.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
How did it feel, man?
Really good. This is the first time that I like quit a really good job for no reason other than we'll get into it out of the intro, but like for no reason other than my own personal like career journey.
I'm making a choice.
Yeah. And it felt really good.
And you gave, I understand, your first F review.
Yeah. I left with a bomb. I just wanted to leave with my first and last ever F review.
And what was it?
It was a book called The Mister from 50 Shades of Grey author E.L. James. And though it's called The Mister, it is not like a BDSM. It's not a sexy book. It's not like a erotic
I was
book.
Picturing like when it gets hot. Yeah, when it gets hot and you mist yourself, like with some like lemon infused water. Like
well,
the
it's a
mister.
Very clever title. Yeah, it has so many interpretations.
Yeah, so it's a bad book.
It was, like, not just bad, but, like, actively offensive. It's about an Albanian woman who is accidentally sex trafficked to the United States, but escapes her sex traffickers and is rescued by a model slash DJ slash Earl.
And a model slash DJ slash
I kid
Earl?
You not.
Earl being, like...
His title, he's, like, a British Earl.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
A little bit of Jane Austen in that.
Yeah.
All right, next up, we have... T-shirt wearing, non-event participating in.
I had one.
Oh, you do?
I was looking through my telephone to find, I'm doing stuff.
Okay.
I'm doing things and stuff.
What are you doing?
I have things and stuff that I'm doing. I'm not just summoned like Nosferatu lying in wait to come.
I would love it if you came in here like Nosferatu floating.
I do think of my life as like me just like lying in bed. And then it's like, oh yes, now I have to be somewhere. And then I just show up to that place. And then somebody's like, what did you do for fun? And I was like, I was lying there. No, I did it was the Indian Film Festival this weekend.
Oh, awesome.
Which is really cool. It's a great festival in Los Angeles, California that kind of celebrates Indians from India and Indians from America. And there was a really terrific and very community building panel, I thought, that I was a part of on Saturday with people from television. That
oh,
was
very cool.
Very That's specific, awesome. Very specific to that community in a way that I thought was... really empowering and a good thing to be a part of.
That's great. So when you laid back down in your lair, you had a smile on your face.
That's correct.
While you awaited
creepy.
Further instructions.
It was a creepy smile. Let's just be very specific.
Well, third, we have Tien Tran, who is, I understand, meeting her niece for the first time.
Yeah. That's the most exciting thing that's happening to me.
Now tell us about your niece.
She was born 3 months ago, and she lives in Dublin. So no one in my family.
No,
that's not. She is a pirate.
Yes.
She is an Irish pirate.
Just separately a pirate. Yeah.
She was born an Irish pirate. And none of us have met her. And all of my family is like, I'm one of three daughters or four daughters. Sorry, I just X'd out one of my sisters.
Wow. You don't have to say which one, but we know.
Yes. Okay, good. we're all meeting her for the first time.
That's going to be so
I'm really excited.
Fun. 3 months old, they're sort of like croissants.
Yeah, they're little. They're like just little dough,
balls of dough that get mad at you sometimes.
Yeah. I love being the aunt because it's like you hold the baby till it's no longer fun and then you give the baby away.
How long is that for you? Because I feel like that number is different for different people.
I can deal for a while. I can probably go for, I'm going to say like I could watch that baby for the day.
Wow.
I think.
That's diaper well,
you're
changing.
Not, you're not holding the baby for the
no,
day.
No, no, no.
Though.
Do you see my arms?
Yes.
I can hold that baby all day.
Yes. That's what I was thinking. Okay. I was like, I think you got 90 seconds. Max.
Oh, my God. Rude. I have at least 95.
I have two nephews, and they both live in Minnesota. And they're like, they're almost three and almost four. And one of them, I was just informed, has been drawing pictures of my house. He, like, has never been to California.
Is it cute or creepy?
I don't know.
Is he coming to murder you?
I haven't seen it yet. But my brother was like, yeah, he's drawing pictures of your house in California, and he's never seen it before. So I hope.
Are they accurate?
If they are, that would be amazing.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't want to scare you, but that is some, like, Michael Myers in Halloween, like, drawing Laurie Strode's house while he's in prison.
Oh, cool.
Oh, wow.
Well, my four-year-old nephew is not in prison.
I would just send him references from Instagram or just take some photo references so that he knows that it's succulent-based, so that he knows about kind of the tile, the Mexican tile on the roof.
You have a really nice house.
You just need to give him some geographical markers so that he can achieve accuracy.
Also, my apartment has a name, like the building has a name. It's like blah, blah, blah. And one of them is a plural and they use a apostrophe on the plural, which I didn't realize until after I signed the lease. Because if I would have seen a sign with a misused apostrophe, I would have been like, I don't know if I want to live here. This is a dump. Anyway, we need to get into the topic for today. I think it sort of fits in with Tien wanting to quit holding her niece after 95 seconds, and Dana quitting her job.
Weak!
I am weak.
It's fine. You can, like, I feel like nephews and nieces, like, make you buff up because yeah. you're around them. You're
human barbells. That's what I call babies.
Yeah. Especially at 3 months. She should have had another one so that you could have evened them out.
You can just do one side at a time, though. Just keep your, you know, keep yourself in alignment and just like, you know.
Keep your core engaged.
Just keep your core engaged. Exactly. You, use gravity to help you and, you know, use your back, but not too much. We're going to talk about quitting this week. And I know that that's a big topic with a lot of different applications, but I think that every time I've personally quit something, there's been a similar set of a similar thought process that I've gone through. There's reasons that you quit things that are like, well, I'm quitting this because this is hurting me. I'm quitting this because I found something that can help me more than this. I'm quitting this because I'm in a holding pattern. There's a bunch of reasons to quit. But because Dana has such a fresh experience with it, I want to start with you. When did you know it was time to quit?
I would say I was like mentally threatening to quit for like a few months beforehand, where like on days where I'd be particularly overwhelmed, I'm just like, I'm just going to quit. I'm just going to quit, you know, like that. But it took, you know, a few months of like actual logistics to make it a decision that wasn't like an impulsive, but it did reach a point. So the reason I quit, and I fully like loved my job at Entertainment Weekly. It was truly like a dream job. Like it was my favorite thing in the world. But I reached this point where I had like, I was juggling like three or four other projects that were really exciting to me and like the things that I wanted to do with my life, like creative. Like I have a book coming out in November and I was working on that.
Congrats.
Thank you. And like a few other things that are sort of in the works. And just like my Entertainment Weekly work started feeling like an anchor on me. Mm-hmm. Like I would be drained by the end of the day and I was getting these amazing opportunities and I didn't have like the energy or creative, like I didn't have the writing words left at the end of the day to like take advantage of them. And so it felt like I wasn't doing either with integrity. Like mm-hmm. I was resenting my Entertainment Weekly work and then I was getting these amazing opportunities and I couldn't give them my all. And mm-hmm. so the way, of course, I like called my mom, but the way I explained it is it's like a monkey bar situation where I needed to sort of like let go of the last monkey bar to grab the next one. Mm-hmm. Like I wasn't leaving for like a specific thing, but I had all this, like, I have these projects that I want to work on. And so I needed to like let go of the monkey bar and just reach and have like a little bit of faith in myself that it would work out. And the hardest part was I just hate confrontation and I loved my bosses. And so it was like really awkward and like a pit in my stomach to like go into the office and be like, hi, can we close the door? A thing we've never done before.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that I think a lot of people feel when they quit. Karen, have you ever had experience with quitting that didn't feel like you had to apologize where you were like, I am fucking quitting?
I don't quit things really.
Okay.
Like just generally, I have quit a few things, but I think my MO has been, this is miserable, but I will hold on for dear life and just muscle my way through whatever this is. And that's how I finished my documentary.
Yeah.
Is like, you know.
How many times did you want to quit when you were doing that?
Every time, all the time.
So can you fill in the listeners about like what you did just in case they don't know already?
Sure. So I graduated from college and I wrote a short novel with this very talented novelist named Jamaica Kincaid. And I wrote a short novel about a woman, a little girl who joins a rebel army in Nepal, right? And then I wanted to make it into a movie, and I didn't have the money to do that. And then somebody suggested to go make a documentary. So the day after graduating, I went to Nepal and thought it would take like 3 months. I thought it would take like a summer to make a documentary. I'm like, yeah, I'll make a documentary. I had a tiny little bit of money, like $5,000 or $7,000 or something. Thought it would take 3 months. And it took like 3 years. It took like basically 3 months to find the character, just to kind of like get in with the rebels, to make the contacts with the journalists, to be able to like get a couple of pitch meetings with the rebels in the jungles and be like, yo, let me, like you wake, it was like 10 o'clock at night. And then it'd be like, yo, be at this bus stop at 5 a.m. And then you get into the bus stop at 5 a.m. And then you ride for several hours and then you hike for another several hours. And then you're a tent with like all dudes, all men and like one translator. And they're like, so what do you want to do? And I was like, a story on the women. And they're like, how dare you? Who do you think you are? Why are you here? But it took time. So it took time, and it took time to raise the money. And then it's what happened was every single time that I really wanted to quit, I'd be like, well, you've put in too much time now. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and that's really a sinking cost, sunk cost equation. Cause it's like, after 3 months, you're like, well, I've got to keep going. Otherwise all of this would have been a waste.
Yeah.
And then it's like 6 months and you're like, well, now that's even more true. And then it's like at a year, you're like, now it's even more true than it was. Oh no, I have to finish this. Uh-huh. Some of the most satisfying work I've done is when I've chosen not to quit.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that that's an important like conundrum. I have a Dana on my shoulder and a Kieran on my shoulder every time I feel like quitting, I think. And so it's like, well, maybe it's time for me to cut loose and go. Like I quit working full time in journalism to take a job writing for Always Sunny. Right. And it all happened within like a day that I knew I was going to leave. And but I made a decision, like, it was like a brainstem response. Like, I didn't even think about it for a second. I wasn't like, should I? Because if I would have slowed down, I would have been like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if I should move to LA for 3 months. I don't know if I should do this. I don't know if I should do this. And like, it's sort of like you need like, it's like when a rocket tries to take off from a gravitational like body, it needs a certain amount of thrust to escape the field. It needs to just be like, I'm just going to do this. And I'm just not even looking back. Tian, what's the best thing you've ever quit and the worst thing you've ever quit? Do you have any regrets?
I don't have any regrets with regards to quitting.
Tell us about your other regrets.
Tell us about your mother.
Just in a list form, if you could. The top three.
The top three regrets?
Yeah.
Lollapalooza 2012. it's a bad one. With quitting, I think, you know, I quit my full time. I used to be a copywriter. I used to work in advertising before I started doing comedy. And when I quit that job, I remember I walked into my office and my boss was kind of like, I knew you were going to quit.
Yeah.
Because I had always, they hired me knowing that I did comedy. And they were like, whenever you need anything, just like, if you have a thing that comes up, just let us know, you're free to go. They were so accommodating. And when I finally got my dream job, which was, I moved to Chicago to do Second City, and it was like my dream to be on main stage to do like what Tina Fey and Rachel Dratch had done. And I quit my day job to then do that and then was able to get to main stage. And I actually just quit main stage this past year. And that Wow. was, it was like leaving my dream job. It Yeah. was truly my dream job. I had spent 10 years in Chicago trying to get to this job, and I did it for a year. And after a year, I was like, I think I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
And then I moved to LA. And I'm trying, the worst thing I ever quit. Oh God. I mean, I can think of the only time I ever quit in like a
flounce.
In a flounce.
You quit in a like flounce.
It was never a job, but it was like in high school with friends. I was leaving my friend group because they became toxic. And
every time you talk on this podcast, you're always like, these people were toxic.
And I
have eliminated them from my life.
I am at that point in my life
you
now where
I've recondoed your
yes,
life.
I
you
have.
Can come join my life.
Your
and Marie
soul
Kondo
had a
too.
Juice cleanse.
My soul had a juice cleanse. Because it's like, you know, life is short. You can't be surrounded by people that make you feel bad.
So you quit your group of friends
in a flounce because I remember I heard one of them had been making fun of me. And at the time,
ooh.
I was wearing Birkenstocks. And I remember.
It is a bad shoe.
It is yeah, a bad shoe. And I was wearing Birkenstocks that were like blue with red, yellow, and green buckles.
Mm.
Okay, I'm not proud of this. I'm
so
sharing.
Is that on
I'm,
the list of regrets? I
mean, that is,
if
that
we
might
make
be
fun of
list.
You, are you going to cut us out?
Yeah, I'm going to stand up and be like, and you know what? I actually remember because I stood up and I like said my piece and then I was like, and you know what? I love my Birkenstocks.
What did you say? Wait, this sounds great.
Well,
this
I just remember
very,
being like
the Mean Girl revenge movie.
It was
sequel.
The Mean Girl. She was, there was like a couple girls that were very mean. They were like bullied. I was like the kid that got bullied in my group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you had that, I was like kind of on the fringe of like the popular girls.
Mm-hmm. Right. They kept you around.
They kept me around to like make fun of me.
That's shitty.
Very toxic.
Very toxic. And I stood up for myself. But I just remember my line.
What did you say?
I think I said something along. It's like, I think I was like, you guys can't pick on me anymore. Like, I'm done with this. And you know what? I love my Birkenstocks.
I feel like I want a t-shirt right now that says, I love my Birkenstocks.
You guys can't pick on me anymore.
I was like sad for months though.
Yeah.
And what did they say to you?
They were just like stunned that
they
weren't used to the confrontation.
Because they were used to bouncing their...
They were used to me being like an Asian minstrel for them.
Yeah, sure.
I'm glad that you said that you love your Birkenstocks. This is a great story. And also, they deserve to feel bad about
themselves.
That's shitty.
You know, your copy editing story, though, was like very similar to the way when I quit, like my bosses were like, yeah, we sort of knew that this would come. I feel like that is sort of a point for all creative people and their day job.
Mm-hmm,
like, you reach a critical mass at some point. And if you have good bosses and, like, a good job, they, like, support and understand you.
Yeah, I think that's really an interesting point when you talk about day jobs, because if you work in a creative field, unless you have rich parents who support you, you have to work a day job. You have to work a job that you very, like, aggressively don't like. For me, it was finance. I worked in finance during the crash, basically. And then once the crash happened, I stayed in finance for longer than I thought I wanted to because I needed insurance. And this was like pre-Obamacare. And I was just like, you know what? I hate this job, but I have to make money. I have to work. And that's what most Americans have to do. They don't love their jobs. They're not excited about it. But I remember the day that I quit working in finance, I'd fantasized about it. It was like, for so long, I thought about it for so long. It would help me sleep at night. I would be like, imagine myself quitting. And this is the only time I've ever weaponized crying. But I had cried in my mid-year review at work.
Can you control crying?
No, I can't. I can stop it if it's coming, but I can't make it come if it's not coming.
That's a superpower.
No, that's also like scary when people can totally control it. It's like, ooh, I don't know about you. You can, Kieran, can you see yourself in mirrors?
Of course.
I mean,
I can, of course.
Oh my gosh. You're an actress, though.
Yeah. You can make yourself cry.
You can make yourself cry?
Of course. Yes.
Oh, don't say of course, like that's a normal thing.
I can't.
Yes, of course.
Well, I went into my boss's office and I decided that rather than just quitting, I was going to ask if they would lay me off because people were getting laid off left and right. And I was like, every Friday, the boss would like come around and like scoop someone up from their cubicle and take them into their office. And it's like, oh, that person got fired today. Just because it was like, that's how things were going.
That is a toxic environment.
Yeah, that is a toxic.
It was
I've been fired. Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
A lot.
I went to my boss's office and I was like, hey, do you recall how I cried during my mid-year review? And he was like, I do remember that. It wasn't pleasant for me. And I was like, wasn't pleasant for me either. And I was like, why don't you lay me off? Because I am leaving financial services. I don't want to work in financial services anymore. And he was like, okay, I'll think about it. End of the day, he was doing his like scary walk around and he scooped me up and was like, well, you volunteered. So here you are. And he gave me a bottle of Pinot. And but I remember walking out of the building wearing my like Express brand like editor pants.
Oh my God, I loved mine.
That was all I wore to work because it was like business work and my like little blazer and my button down shirt in a primary color and like thinking like, I don't have to wear any of these clothes anymore. I'm done with this. And I went back to my house and I emptied my closet. I took all of them and I piled them up.
Are you in a romantic comedy?
Did you burn them?
No, I put them in a plastic garbage bag and I donated them. But yeah, I like threw away all my like business clothes and I was like, I'm done with business. And then a couple years later when I was like doing CNN, I was like, I need business. So fuck. But it was like great. I felt very clean after I quit that industry.
I freelanced. I freelanced, tutored, and did like stuff in academia and then was just very broke while I made my film. So that's also another way to do it.
And just be very broke. Get used to
I was very broke. So I was like, my cost of living was just extremely low. I lived with roommates. I ate at home. I would like pre-eat before brunch, you know, like, I was just very broke.
The thing about EW is it was sort of like, it wasn't like a day job that I hated. Like I really loved it and enjoyed it. But the thing about like wanting to do creative things and then your day job being like the creative thing adjacent is I found it like drained all of my like writing energy.
Yeah.
Like I just cannot sit at a desk and write like you know, not for me, but like write creatively for 8 hours mm-hmm. and then come home and be like, all right, time to write my thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really interesting. I was doing that in New York. I had like 4 different jobs. Yeah. I was like going to the Daily Beast and then I was going to CNN and then I was working on scripts. I was doing Crooked stuff. I was like too many things.
Yeah.
And when I was in the process of doing that, I had to like segment my day mentally. I didn't have any time for leisure. So I would come home and like work on stuff to write. And I would like have a drink at night. And I got used to like, by the end of my time in New York, I was like, I am drinking alcohol every single day. And this is like an unhealthy thing for me to do. I wasn't like, you know, calling people up and being like, and another thing. I wasn't doing anything like personally destructive, but I was just like, this is a lifestyle that I need to quit. I need to quit this unhealthy thing. And I wanted to transition into like unhealthy habits or unhealthy lifestyle choices and talk about whether or not any of you have ever confronted something like that and decided to quit. Like I smoked from like 18 to 24. And one day I just woke up and I was like, I think I'm done.
Good for you.
I used to drive when I was doing the CBS Diversity Showcase, which really stressed me out. I would drive 45 minutes each way in traffic to get coffee from this like one gourmet coffee place. Just like in the middle of traffic, I would drive 45 minutes one
45
way.
45 minutes?
Because it was at the height of traffic.
Out of habit? Just or because the coffee was so good?
And it was like a way to say, I'm like, after this kind of traumatizing experience, I'm going to treat myself to something. I, you know, justified it to myself. But then I talked to somebody and I talked to like a therapist and they were like, listen, your time is more valuable than this. And like, you know, you have to respect yourself and your time. And, you know, you can't, you know, be driving 2 hours out of your day just to get a cup of coffee. So
no coffee is worth that.
No. I moved closer to the coffee.
A cup of coffee is worth that.
That's right. I just moved.
My bad habit is I get really stressed out by receiving mail. I will let mail stack up like crazy. I think it's from my days of like filling out FAFSA forms and getting student loan stuff. And it just like from there slowly stressed me out that anytime I got a letter, it's like, oh, you have like student loans that you need to pay.
You're in trouble.
And so it wasn't like an issue until I started living with my partner. And she was like, you have like 6 months worth of mail that you just simply have not opened and or touched.
If you don't open, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, if I don't open it, then like someone's going to call me at some point. I'll answer a phone call. But a mail, like the mail is I'll just let it stack up. And there were some important papers that were in paper. And she opened them, which is a federal offense, but she was helping me. But she helped me go through all of it. And that my new thing is like I am trying to open my mail when I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You quit not opening your mail.
I quit quitting mail.
You quit quitting mail?
It stresses me. Those forms and papers stress me out.
That is, I think, a good thing to quit doing because that's an avoidant behavior.
Yeah,
and I think that like it's probably better to confront things head on. I was thinking about the way that women are taught to approach relationships. And like the only way that it's a success is if you don't quit it. Like you quit, you are the failure. And I just was wondering if any of you had experience kind of feeling like in the rearview mirror that you hung on to a relationship for too long because you felt like you could kind of bring up the nose on it.
Literally. I never leave a relationship.
Like you wait until they are like, okay, that's enough, Dana.
Well, I wait until there's like...
Actually, that's how I was going to end this podcast. Yeah.
Okay, that's enough, Dana. Yeah.
That's enough, Dana.
You know what? Fair.
That's your sitcom title.
Yeah. No, that's enough, Dana.
Oh, I would watch the shit out of that show.
Guys, after this,
okay, yes.
Let's go. Let's bang out a script.
Writer's room.
I'm just... I think, like, I was a weird, awkward child, and, like, boys didn't want to kiss me in middle school. And so I think now if anyone wants to date me, I'm just like, oh, great, this is it. This is probably the last person who will ever want to date me, ever. Mm-hmm. I guess this is it. And so I'm slowly getting better now as a 26-year-old lady. But that is my instinct, like the instinct that I'm always fighting against. Mm-hmm.
Somebody specifically told me that they matched with you on the internet, who is a listener and was like very excited. And I was like, well, at some point, if we meet, you know what I mean? Like, if at some point
oh
we
God,
meet,
so it's
like,
you would just bring that person
is
into
he
this
here?
Recording.
And he's here right now.
Yeah. And bring him in. And behind door number one is your new life partner that you'll never quit.
I can say that I relate to that a lot, Dana, that I always think, or I thought when I was younger, before I really felt like I was doing what I wanted to do, and that I was like, oh, I have a lot to offer somebody. I would always think, like, this is the last person who's ever going to think I'm pretty, ever. And I would, so I would hang on to things for too long. And there's a couple relationships that I had with men that were, I sort of slow faded, you know, where it was like,
I just want to unpack the sentence. This is the last person who will think I'm pretty. That's such an Amy Schumer movie title.
But then she hits her head and she's like, everyone thinks I'm pretty.
Yeah, exactly. It's hilarious. But I would always think like, oh, I'm not going to meet anybody ever again. So I would sometimes, but also know that the relationship is wrong. And so I would just sort of emotionally detach and kind of, have you ever seen a kid being like dragged out of something and they don't want to be dragged out and they just kind of were like that? That was me in a relationship that was like too, like it had gone on for too long.
I like, have you ever seen like the way octopodes?
Whoa.
Octopodes. I think that is might be it. I've never said that out loud, but it's really
fun.
Maybe
the octopodes will be your life partner forever.
The Greek philosopher.
Have you ever seen a singular octopus detach from like a glass wall with its suction cups? And it's
it's cool.
One at a time?
Yeah.
Like that's what I'm imagining for you, like slowly detaching. It's like...
Yeah. Well, one time, this was like a decade ago, so I don't think I'm blowing anybody's spot up, but a person I had been dating brought up that he was like, yeah, when we have kids, and I burst into tears. And that's how I knew.
On purpose?
No! I was like, I should probably be fair to this person and actually decide to quit.
Yeah.
I think that that's another thing, is like, a lot of times, quitting comes in the context of things that are over, and they're wise decisions. But I wanted to talk before we finish this conversation about the flounce. We talked briefly about the flounce, which is a sort of dramatic quitting gesture designed to elicit an emotional response from other people. I wanted to ask you, Dana, have you ever witnessed a true like flounce? Like,
no,
and I'm done, or like, good day, sir.
No, I truly wish I would. I think that seems so fun. I mean, it's just, again, my style is like I'm like a church mouse is like my work personality, which is like, I am so sorry that I'm inconveniencing you with my leaving. So that is so counter to anything I would ever do at an office. Mm-hmm. But oh my God, I would love to see that. Like someone do like a music video, like lip sync out and moonwalk.
Oh, like a like one of those
like a
viral marriage proposals, but a viral quitting.
A viral quitting video. I would love that.
Yeah.
Have you ever, Kieran, fantasized about a flouncy quit? I know that you don't typically quit, but do you ever think about it? You're like, I wish I could just go up to this person and be like, F you, never talk to me again. Now blast off into space.
Have you, the follow up question adding to that, have you ever had like a saying like F you to someone and meant it? Like really, like had your moment.
So if somebody really betrays me, like, because I'm quite a loyal person. So with people, there have been times when I will like, I might not end the friendship, but I will detach. Like I will detach. And then there's a few times when it's been like somebody's done something really, really, in my opinion. I mean, and this is a question: is any action from a person forgivable? Do you know what I mean? If the person shows remorse, is any action forgivable, or is it like, and I love the way Tien is
like,
already
make
like,
fun of the
Tien is already like, let me tell you, so you put on your Birkenstocks and you walk
grudges.
Out
what
of there.
Say?
Yeah, no, but that's a question. It's mm-hmm. like, because, you know, somebody once said, I think I was doing ayahuasca and the lady there was like, she goes, oh, all people. This is just an interesting phrase, I thought. She goes, all people are laced with poison. Mm-hmm. Every person is laced with poison. But like, you know, if you want to get to the good stuff inside, it's like, you know, there, you'll have to get through the poison first, which is, I think, a nice way of saying everyone will betray you.
But that's
is
also
the point. And just really, as a matter of what kind of betrayal.
No. I feel like
so
that
is
so people dark. Who are
Thank
in
you
like,
so much. I actually thought it was really her whole point was like she was like, I used to avoid people. And then I learned a way to metabolize the poison.
Oh,
you know,
like
was the point.
People who are in
to,
like. Sorry.
Let's go back to the Charlotte's Web comic.
No, I was saying, like, people who are in abusive relationships, like, I don't want them to think, like, yeah. Oh, well, I just have to take this poison.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think the part of the wisdom is being able to, like, recognize, like, what is, like, normal human prickliness and what is, like, a fundamentally bad
yeah,
person.
Sure. Yeah. That's fair.
I think that's a great question, too, because, you know, there's something to be said for... I've also been, you know, in my friendships, I've been kind of relentless about cutting people off. Like, I can forgive people, like you brought up. I can forgive them, but I don't forget what happened. And sometimes our relationship cannot be repaired. Like, I am not, mm-hmm. I'm no longer angry with you, but I no longer want anything to do with you. My feelings toward you are cold. And that happens to me, it's happened to me a few times where I've been very close with, like, a friend and they've done something fucked up and they've been like, I'm sorry. And I'm like, okay. I don't think you're a bad person, but I just don't want anything to do with
what
you
what counts as fucked up to you? Like, what would be, you know, kind of a general example so that you're not...
I think a good example, like, the reason that a person has friends is so that you feel that they, even though they might judge you sometimes, they would never condemn you. They would never treat you like you're a piece of shit. They would listen to you, mm-hmm. but also not give you... I don't think that they should... endorse every single thing you do, but I think that they should also, you know, not make you feel like shit if you're not kick you when you're down. And I think that being kicked when I'm down is like one of the things that I like kind of find unforgivable that it happens like on a regular basis. I just am sort of like, nope, I don't want anything to
That's
do
like
with
like opposite of friend behavior.
Yeah, that is not a person to keep around.
But people do that sometimes. Yeah. I think that people like to feel empowered by eliciting a response from people. And sometimes the only people who will respond are the people that are close to you. So I think that's why people act like dicks sometimes. And that's why people will, you know, lash out at the people closest to them because they feel powerless and they want to elicit a response. But that's like quitting behavior.
Or it's like, you know, I remember one time when we were talking about this, like, Listener Hill, right? And the guy was in the van. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember this, but he was in the van with the construction workers. Mm-hmm. And so just for context, there's a guy who was in a van with construction workers, and all the construction workers, when they would come back, would, like, catcall women. He was like, this makes me feel really uncomfortable, but I'm not sure if I can, like, say something. And we were talking about, like, oh, maybe you could use humor to kind of, like, like, kind of just shame, like, kind of get your point across, where it'd be like, oh, that'd be a way to get a girlfriend in 2019. I'm sure she's really going to respond to that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or whatever, you know.
Yeah, and like, that's how I met my wife.
Right. Exactly. Like just being like quippy or sarcastic. But I've done that in rooms and spaces. And then other people would be like, you were being really toxic. You know what I mean? So it's like my point is like, well, I was being marginalized in a space, mm-hmm. you know, where people didn't hear me. And my tactic was humor. Mm-hmm. Like it was humor or to be a little bit salty just to get the point across and be. But the truth of the matter is in a space I was being, you know, just bulldozed and marginalized. So it's intention is a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you were talking about like, and even when you're quitting someone or a person, it's like intention is, and I know people are like, oh, it's not the intention. It's like the impact. But I actually think it's like in a court of law, it's intention is massive. You know, if you meant to murder somebody, it's different than if you're like, oops, I hit you with my car.
Yeah, but the person is still dead.
Yeah,
you know, like
yeah.
that's the end result. That's the thing. Like intention does matter, but so does outcome. And
sure.
it's like,
but the punishment is different for both.
That's true.
Yeah. Like a friend who does something to hurt you accidentally versus a friend who does something to hurt you maliciously. There's mm-hmm. a difference.
Totally. I think another thing that's important when we talk about quitting is in our fucked up modern day, I think that there's been a major conflation between criticism and toxicity. Like people mm-hmm. sometimes interpret any criticism as like toxic behavior or any confrontation as toxic, and confrontation isn't inherently toxic. And that's something that I kind of struggle with in the like feel good about yourself all the time yeah. culture that we're living mm-hmm. in, because it's like, yeah, but I think a lot of criticism is warranted, and I think it's important for people to take in criticism and to take a look at themselves and decide, you know, do I need to change something? Am I hurting people? But then, you know, toxicity isn't. So I guess, Kieran, can you tell the difference between criticism and toxicity? Or is it something that you struggle with at all?
I mean, I hope so. But Yeah, I think sometimes it takes, I think that takes a lot of self-knowledge and like, and introspection to be like, I mean, now I'll try to be like, how do I feel? I try to say, how do I feel when I walk away? I have a pretty strong gut. So how do I feel when I walk away from this interaction? Mm-hmm. And if I'm consistently walking away from a person and I like feel bad in my stomach, that's usually a sign that something's not, I don't feel good for a certain reason. Mm-hmm. But I would also say like the same thing, like criticism versus toxicity also applies to humor. You know, like I remember one time like we were bantering and I think we both thought it was fun, but like somebody on the internet was like, oh, is there...
Are they fighting?
Mm-hmm.
No, not
at all. But like, but if you were a more sensitive person or I was a more sensitive person, maybe that would feel like bullying. Mm-hmm. So I think that whole you know, the line of what's quote unquote fun versus what is hurtful to another person can be so different for different people. Yeah. So a little bit of like empathy moving forward. Don't quit me so early.
I would never. I love you guys. I think we solved it, guys. It's an emotionally loaded thing and it's something that everybody individually needs to decide is right for them, but I don't think that reflexive quitting is necessarily good. But you should flounce. If we're at a dinner, if I'm at a restaurant and you're also at a restaurant and you're going to break up with someone, do it in front of me. I love seeing that. I think.
Have you ever seen a breakup?
Oh, yes. I saw a giant.
I have not either.
I love seeing people fighting in public because it's like, oh, any strong emotions in public, happiness in public, sadness in public. I feel bad for the person. I want to hug them. But like fighting in public is my other favorite thing. It's so good. I don't watch reality TV either. I just like watching people. Like if I walk down the sidewalk and I see people fighting, I'm like, hell yeah. And like walk slowly past it.
It's funny because it's you like high stakes. You like high stakes in real life in the same space as you.
Yeah.
I get that. It's like if you're at a coffee shop, you're like, oh, I'm just reading my book. But somebody else is like ending a relationship that's like going to change their life.
Yeah.
And you're in the same space, mm-hmm. you know?
I was watching.
That's kind of wild.
It is. It's like watching someone and being like, this is the best day of this person's life. I was watching soccer this weekend.
Ooh.
British club soccer.
Look at you. Yes. Yeah. Very cultured.
Were you watching the Premier League?
I was.
Oh, my God. Are you watching soccer tonight?
I was watching the Premier League. No, I was watching Liverpool because I got.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cause why?
Because a boy made me do it.
Oh
no! But it was fun.
It's a very exciting time right now for Liverpool.
Liverpool is great. They could, as I understand, win the trophy.
My entire family just like perked up. They're like, what?
Well, I was watching. You know, when the club like high level club soccer and like in the World Cup, the players walk out holding hands with the kids, and
aww.
I love watching. There's like little kids that come out.
Should
and stand
I watch
with them.
Soccer, guys?
Yeah, soccer is the best sport.
It's really. Club level play is better than World Cup play because it's like smoother and cleaner and not as dirty. But anyway, so I was watching these kids walk out holding the hands of these soccer players and thinking every little kid in that line is going to remember this for the rest of their lives. This is like the best day of these little kids. And it's like so cool to witness that. But anyway, we're getting off topic. We have to wrap up on quitting.
We have to quit this episode.
We have to quit. And then we have to take a break. But this episode is not quitting because we're coming back with the hills that we'll die on. Welcome back. We've reached the point in the show where we take adamant stances on things that don't really matter. It's the hills we'll die on. Let's start with a listener hill.
Hi, Hysteria. The hill I will die on is that holding hands while you're walking is fucking stupid. Inevitably, one person is taller than the other, and then you're one person's elbow's too high and one person's elbow's too low, and it's breaking up your stride, your hands get all sweaty. Like, just hold the fuck on. Wherever we're going, we can sit down, sit real close to each other, it'll be all cute. You don't have to hold my hands while we're trying to get somewhere. And that is the hill I will die on. Thanks.
Okay.
Wow.
I was recently down at like USC. And so there's all these like cutesy couples and stuff. You know, everyone's like in college. So, but I noticed I would just be staring to the point that I made people uncomfortable and then they unclasped their hands. So I'm available, listener. If somebody is holding your hand, he'll stop.
The unclaspinator.
Oh, yeah, that's
superpower. I think that like the thing about hand holding, I like doing it. I think it's just fine. But eventually like somebody gets sweaty and there's a time to detach and it's never like I'm angry, I'm detaching from holding your hand. But it just becomes like, oh, I don't want to hurt this person's feelings. Yeah. Like, I don't want to be holding your hand for the next 3 hours.
You got to know when to quit.
Right. Exactly. Got to know when to quit. That's my feeling about hand holding.
It's a safety thing for my partner and I. Sometimes we do, and sometimes we don't in certain spaces because of like, being like catcalled and or having experiencing homophobia is a thing that informs our handholding sometimes.
I'd imagine that holding hands for a member of the LGBT community would be something that means a lot more to people in the straight community, if there is such thing as a straight community.
The straight.
Well, because when I first came out, I was like, yes, I'm doing this. And then, then we'd be on the street and I've had several occasions where it's usually groups of men will be like, oh, lesbians. And it's... Well, one, they're correct. Like
they're just good use of the vocab word you just learned.
Just accurate. Like then they're like tree.
Yeah.
Right after seeing lesbian, and they're like, oh, bro.
Oh, I actually remember
they're just working on nouns.
We walked by a baby shower once, and my girlfriend and I were holding hands, and like. There were a bunch of dads outside the baby shower that were like, oh, lesbians. And at that point, like,
what?
I had, like, gotten used to that. And she turned around and she starts going, hey, don't say that. But I just went, you better fuck up. I think I was just, like, full, like, ready to fight.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I think dads outside a baby shower catcalling is, like, the worst. That is.
Yeah,
that
is, it was bad.
You were standing outside a party celebrating the fact that one of you came in somebody.
Yeah. That's what Erin would have said. Like, that's literally, she would have turned around and been like, you are celebrating the fact that one of you came inside somebody. And I'd be there and I'd be like, you're just practicing nouns. They're like, we gotta stop talking out loud.
Yeah, that would have been a lot of talking at once, and all of those great lines would have been lost because they would have just all happened at once. Well, Tian, do you want to start our?
Oh, yeah, things? Actually, it relates to baby showers. I think my hill that I will die on is I think that grown adults, especially grown women, should stop calling their dads daddy.
Oh.
It really, really, really creeps me out. And I only thought of it because my older sisters keep doing it in like text form and in like person form.
Ugh. But what's the intonation?
It's just, I think any intonation of daddy is as if you're referring to your own father when you're a grown woman. There is no intonation that's good.
I definitely have a cousin who'll be like, daddy, daddy. And it always makes me laugh. It makes me laugh. I think it's hilarious.
You know, I think it's weird too, because I've, in my small research group, they don't say mommy. Like they just say daddy and then it's mom or mama, but never daddy and mommy. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of other things you could be calling your dad.
Peter.
Peter's one.
Yeah. His name is
regardless
Peter.
Of his name. Yeah.
No, Peter is the universal. So just
I think the rule
it creeps
is
me out.
You can only call your dad daddy if you're fucking your dad.
Yeah.
That's a great rule. Reasonable.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable rule too.
It's a great rule.
I have no response. Rare for me.
Karen, what hill will you die on this week?
I recently joined the internet. Yes. Thank you so much.
The hip hop group that put out an awesome album last summer?
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
No.
Okay.
I didn't know about that. What's a jugaboo? All right. So I joined the internet. No, I joined internet dating just for a very, I joined a few
Mazel
sites.
Tov.
Thank you so much.
How's it going?
I'm a bit lazy on the apps. I've done two. But I'm on two of them. And I was like, oh, there's a lot. I didn't realize there were so many people.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people in the world. There's a lot.
Yeah.
Like if you want to be in a relationship, you 155% can. Just statistically, it's like there's a lot of people.
how long have you been on the apps?
Yeah. I was like, have you talked to them?
2 days. 2 days.
Okay.
Maybe 2 days. Yeah. But I was like, there's a lot of people. Like if 60, like whatever. Just from statistically, I was like, if you really put time into this, yeah, you could probably make something happen. It's just a matter of if you just are really putting the elbow grease in, which is like another job. Listen, this is the Hill. Sidetracked. Here's the Hill. There's people on that, the thing that'll be like, oh, if you laugh at my, and if you laugh at my dad jokes, if you laugh at my stupid dad jokes, I like you. I want people to stop saying that shit. I don't be proud of the fact that you're shitty at a thing and put that on websites. That's insane. Like, you're bad at a thing, and then you're like, look at how charming I am with my mediocrity. I'm like, fuck you. Fuck your dad jokes.
Daddy jokes.
Ridiculous. Like, think about how long you've worked in comedy or at getting funny or whatever it is that you do. And it's like, you would never put a skill like, and if you enjoy my burnt cooking. No. Right. No. None of
it. I'm a shitty journalist, and if you can laugh at that, then you're great.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
If you can laugh at my, you know, the skill that I'm kind of terrible at, then we're going to get along great. And I was like, yeah, because I'm basically fucking kowtowing to you. Get out of my life, bitch.
I'm mediocre. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Another thing that I noticed when I
don't
was,
like it. When stop I was, doing it.
It's bad. On the apps, gentlemen, people are always looking for partners in crime.
Oh.
Like, I'm looking for a partner in crime. And it's like, there is an impending white crime spree going to, as soon as all these people find partners, it's just going
to
be.
I'm looking to rob a bank. I'm specifically looking to rob a bank. Somebody else is asking for a partner in crime, and I'd be like, okay, let's
do this.
Let's plan a heist.
Does anyone ask for, like, I'm looking for my best friend? Do they do that too? Is that
that's
one?
That's sad.
Yeah. Okay. Just making sure.
I've seen a lot of looking for the, like, Pam to my gym.
I saw somebody say that.
You know, I don't like that couple.
Yeah.
You don't like
that couple. I don't like that couple. I think they're the worst TV couple in all of history.
Wow. Yeah. That's a
worst
lot.
Worst in all of TV history. There's a lot of history.
Yeah, no, I think they're the worst. Because I think they were held up so high.
This should be a different Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I need to listen to this podcast.
Well, Dana, you've been busy working at Entertainment Weekly. Now you'll have time.
Yeah. Now I have time.
You can catch up on podcasts. That's why you quit your job.
I did catch up on
podcasts. Dana, what's the Hill you'll die on?
Okay. So it was announced that the new Avengers movie is going to have like a 3+ hour runtime. Oh. And I think the Hill I should die on is that if a movie is longer than 2.5 hours, you have to, by law, bring back a Sound of Music style intermission so people can go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Old-timey movies had this. Oh. Broadway shows have this.
Yes.
Like,
some Bollywood movies have this.
Yeah, Bollywood movies have this. Like, I just can't. I have a weak bladder. Movie theaters, you get popcorn, you get a bottle of water. And, like, the Russo, the guys who were doing Endgame were like kind of bragging about like there's not going to be a time in this movie to go to the bathroom, like it's all, and because people asked and they're like it's all so jam packed, and I'm like, that's not something to brag about. Human beings have to go to the bathroom.
Yeah,
like, don't brag. And or just, so either you have to have an intermission or you have to have like a 5-minute scene in the middle of your movie where just like two characters talk about their day.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, in Greece, they have intermissions in the middle of movies, too.
Yeah.
But that's so everybody, they put them in so everybody
that's
can go
so
smoke.
Nice. I've never heard of that.
Well, so they can go smoke in the lobby.
Okay.
Because everybody smokes in Greece. I don't know why. I find it rude when movies are that long.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, how dare you?
I think all romantic comedies should be a tight 90.
Yeah.
And if your movie is longer than 90 minutes, it's like you better be Francis fucking Coppola.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel. I feel like if your movie is longer than 90 minutes, you have to be a genius.
Yeah, interesting. Okay.
I have to pee.
Just marinate on that. I'll just marinate on
what you're
you all
said. A genius. So your movie can be as long as you want.
No, I don't know. But what did you say? Oh, Greece. I like the idea that somebody just has to take a break from being entertained.
Yeah, they're like,
okay, now I need some rest. Okay, let's return to the entertainment.
Right.
That's fun.
It's so great.
I don't smoke.
Yeah.
I just gotta pee.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things is an addiction, and one of the things is just a bodily process. One of the things that when I was in Greece, I watched The Passion of the Christ, which wasn't a great choice because the movie is in Aramaic and the subtitles were in Greek.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah. So it was, I spoke zero of those languages.
But you got it, though.
It's like a pantomime.
You got the, you got the gist. I got the gist. You knew the storyline.
I get it. Like, the... So did Jesus and Pontius Pilate get together at the end? Like,
can I say something embarrassing right now that I just realized?
Yeah.
When you said in Greece...
Yeah, you, you thought the musical. I thought that
there's
too. When you first started talking about in Greece, you're like, they have a lot of intermissions because of the smoking. And I was like, no, she's talking about something else.
At first,
she's talking about a country.
At first, I was like, in the movie Greece? And then I was like, oh, in the movie, they go to like a drive-in theater and then there's a break in the movie they go to. I was like, I don't remember that scene in Greece.
Oh my God.
But now I just realized that Erin is a world traveler and I just like movie musicals.
No, I'm just old and I've done a lot of stuff. all right. The Hill That I Will Die On this week. So I recently started doing yoga and I really enjoy it and it's great. But one thing that I have noticed that I really don't like is that at the end of some classes, people will clap. Don't. Do not clap at the end of yoga class. Like, I understand that there's certain workout situations where, like, clapping is, it's like Soul Cycle. Yay, we did it. It was really hard. That's like part of the experience of Soul Cycle. I do not need to end a session of yoga in Savasana with someone being like, yay, we did it. No, like clap for yourself once you leave the room. I need peace and quiet. I'm focusing on my breath. I am like engaging in the practice of yoga right now. And applause is not part of it. Do not clap at the end of yoga.
You have a lot of very strong feelings about yoga. Yeah. I feel like the last time I was on this, you were like, I don't like sitting still at the end and breathing. I don't like it. I don't like it. And I was like, I got hills. I got yoga hills. As an Indian person, I got some fucking yoga hills.
I would
love. But I'll save those for a different day.
I would love to hear your yoga hills. I think sitting still and breathing is difficult for me. And I'm trying to, taking yoga, part of it is I'm trying to learn how to do that.
So this is like a multi-hill for you. It's like you're sitting still and breathing and now you're like, so stop. Stop clapping.
Just let me focus on stillness.
Yeah.
I want stillness.
This is a multi-hill hike for Erin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is actually the rest of the season. It's just more hills.
I'm
about
just
this.
Like dying on every single peak. And there's just like my frozen corpse is used as like direction for the other hikers.
Oh. See, this is why I do yoga at home.
Oh, okay.
Do you have a cat?
No. Oh, well, I do, but not at my current apartment. It's with my partner.
Because I'm going to say I try to do yoga at home sometimes, but my cat gets very angry and confused by, like, me doing body movements on the floor and just perches directly underneath me.
Yeah, a lot of animals have that.
Yeah, Eleanor does that, too, when I try to do it at home.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right.
It's a cat thing.
It's a cat thing. We solved it. that's all the time we have for this episode of Hysteria. Dana, Tien, and Kieran, thank you so much for hanging out. Alyssa Mastromonaco, thank you for calling in. There will be more Hysteria next week. Girls just wanna have fun, so Annie, get your gun. Give them what they want, it will never be enough. You can take what you want from me. Yeah, I'll say it loud, and we're gonna shut it down. All the girls to the front with me. Girls to the front. Girls to the front. Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.